Hi, good evening. My name is Chip and I'm an addict. And for the gentleman there, je m'appelle Chip et je suis dépendante. Okay, that's my French out of the way. I always admire people who don't think about what they're going to say before they do a share. I think about almost everything I say to everybody in the world before I actually it comes out of my mouth. But I have thought less about what I'm going to say tonight, mostly because I've had an incredibly busy and sort of exciting day, so it's taken my mind off it. However, I did give some thought when I left. I've travelled 150 miles to get here. That's nothing to be proud of. I would have travelled 250 miles just on the off chance there might have been some score somewhere. Travelling to a meeting is of no consequence. I haven't thought too hard about what I'm going to say, but I definitely gave some thought to what I was going to wear. Because I am, after several decades of recovery, still massively self-obsessed about what people think of me. And so there was a bit of a wardrobe I knew which pair of jeans I was going to wear. I decided that shirt and tie was a bit AA, so I wasn't going to do that. had to go slightly for the casual look. I knew I've got three pairs of jeans. I've got a favourite pair of jeans. And I went for a sort of shirt and T-shirt look, which I thought was suitably casual, and some nice, strong, sturdy boots, which are symbolic of the sturdy foundation upon which my recovery is built. I am ashamed to say that halfway through the afternoon I was walking around and I caught a glimpse of myself in a shop window and my T-shirt felt a bit sort of loose and didn't quite... I went and bought a fucking new T-shirt so that I could present in exactly the manner in which I wanted to present. Casually at ease with himself. I was asked to do this share the other day, but it was my 70th birthday, and which was amazing. Seeing as I was on a life support machine for 5 days when I was 26, I didn't really think I would make it to 30. I was 37 when I got recovery, so I hadn't really expected to make it to 40. I got hepatitis when I in early recovery, so I didn't really expect to make it to 50. And so I'm stunned that I am as old as I am, and I wish I bloody wasn't. But I am. And I was thinking about, I remember my using really, really clearly, the one thing I was thinking today was if at my very first meeting, or when I first got clean, more likely when I first got clean, that somehow somebody had managed to get me into a sort of time machine and take me forward to today and put me outside this house, and I'd go, well, what's that? And they'd say, that's your house. I go, fuck off. I don't know what the rules are about swearing, but I've broken them already. There's no chance of me doing 40 minutes without saying fuck. It's absolutely no. It's a waste of time. That's not going to happen to me. And then out through the front door would walk this beautiful French woman, because I'm married to a French woman. I said, who's that? That's your wife. Fuck. Wow. Wouldn't have believed that to be possible. And then this tall, good-looking, not me. 23-year-old would walk out, and I'd say, "Who the hell is that?" "That's your son. And he's really well. And he loves you." And I thought, "Jeez, stop it. This is just ridiculous." And then this grey-haired old man would walk out in his Marks and Spencer's tweed jacket, and he'd open the boot of his incredibly boring Toyota saloon car that's 15 years old and put his golf clubs in the back of the car. And I'd say, "Who's that?" And they'd say, "That's you." I'd go, "Fuck, get me out of here." I think I'll go back to using. I have turned into the sort of person I absolutely hated and despised with a vengeance when I was using. "You fucking prat, you pompous, sitting there in your no mortgage, lucky old you. If I can have you, I can see the silver through your window. I'll have that in no time." I live the kind of life that I thought was going to be so boring. And I absolutely love it. I love it so much. I tick all the NA boxes. I was sexually abused by a member of my family, which went on for a few years. I was brought up by a mother who was incapable of touching me. I had a brother who was sectioned when he was 9 years old and has never been seen since. I went to boarding school when I was seven, and I got wanked off by the piano teacher every week. Didn't learn the piano. So by the time I was sort of 16, 17, I was really, really damaged goods, as many of us are. I found drugs and loved them, and absolutely loved what they did for me, and enjoyed the first year and a half. And then things started going wrong little by little by little, and it's that incremental decline that is always so surprising to us. The only analogy I've ever been able to kind of come up with is, any of you that have been in a long-term relationship will know that there was a moment when you first met when the person who you were with is just the most incredible person you've ever been with. They are just so funny, and they've got that lovely little infectious laugh, and sex is incredible, and they come from such a lovely, secure family. And sooner or later, you think that infectious laugh is probably the most annoying noise I've ever heard in my life. And if her family ring up one more time, I'm going to go crazy. And then after about 15 years, you look across the bed and you think, "How the fuck did I end up with that?" And she, I'm sure, is probably thinking exactly the same. And as a result, and it was my using was like that. It was like I didn't really register what was happening. Even though, as I said, life support machines and prison, I went to prison for 3 years. All the indicators were there that things were going badly wrong, homeless, all that sort of stuff. All the usual cliched, stereotypical train spotting stuff, that was me. You'd think that it would have got through, that something was going wrong, but it didn't. I thought everything was fine, and just didn't register the normal things that people were. I can remember the first time I was on Christian name terms with a dealer down on Piccadilly Circus, which is where all the using was in my day. Pre-mobile phones, as I like to say, proper using, not the cliche, luxurious sort of using that people do nowadays. You sit at home on your sofa and you just tap in messages. We had to go out and score. We had to give money to strangers and wait 8 hours for them to return. When they would then give you a packet that had half a gram in, for which you'd paid for a gram, and they would convince you that it was a gram, and you knew it wasn't, but you'd say yes anyway, because you just wanted to score. Or else I would be whining through letterboxes at 7 o'clock in the morning, even though my dealer had said never ever come round before 11 o'clock. I would be shouting through the letterbox, please, 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 can I use your bathroom? And I didn't think there was any way out. I ended up in some very peculiar places. I ended up in a Scientology place once. I always need to ask if there are any Scientologists here tonight, because you're nuts. I feel it only fair to tell you that you are completely utterly bonkers. It was a bed for the night, I didn't care. Then eventually I was lucky enough, I really, really lucky, in that I decided to get clean at a time when, if you decided to get clean, there was a rehab available for you. And I count myself extremely lucky, because it isn't like that nowadays. Went to this rehab in the dead of night in 1984, and walked into this big room, and I just felt so uncomfortable in my skin. I hadn't used for about 4 hours, so obviously I was dying. I was as near death as it was possible to get, as all addicts are within about half an hour of having their last hit. And I can remember many times lying on the sofa, just writhing in agony. I can't move, man. Oh God, it's awful. And then somebody would say, look, there's some gear in Battersea. I was off that sofa in no time at all. It's amazing how even just the thought of gear was enough to make you feel better. The power, the magical power of a gyro in your hand could make you all withdrawals go away in an instant. It's an incredible substance they put in a gyro, but whatever it is, it makes you feel a lot better once you know that you're going to be able to score. And of course, whenever I got my gyro, I would also have a little list of things that I was going to do with my gyro money. I was going to spend £20 buying food for the week, and I was going to pay back John the £30 that I'd borrowed and promised to pay back on Gyro Day. And I was going to buy a travel card, and I would spend the rest on drugs, which the state had obviously set aside a certain amount of money in the jar for me to buy drugs with. And then when I got the jar, I thought, well, fuck John, he's a bastard. I'll walk home, I don't need a travel card. I'm not that hungry, I might as well spend it all on drugs. Every jar a day was a good day. The rest was shit. The rest was just sort of gathering together odd collections of free books, half broken iron I found in a skip somewhere, £2.10, a few bits and odds and ends I'd nicked, and a sort of little bag of swag I'd take down the dealer and try and get a deal for it. And then if not, I would spend all day cleaning his kitchen and running errands and doing anything I could just so I could get a few filters. Oh joy. So I don't do that any longer. I was really lucky. I found I got a detox just like that without any problems at all, and I remember going into this room and I thought, sooner or later someone's going to get out a guitar and they'll be singing Kumbaya, and a week later they were. I almost joined in. It was in rehab that I had my first romance. I know we're not supposed to have sex for the first year, but I've never ever understood that rule. It's not written anywhere, and I always go to great lengths to say, what on earth happens on day 366 that suddenly makes you able to cope with relationships? Because I've been married twice in recovery. I've been married four times in my life, but twice in recovery, so I don't know. Anyway, this woman touched my knee, which was a fatal mistake. I fell in love, as I always did. Anybody I had sex with, I always fell in love. It was impossible for me to not wake up in the morning and say, I love you. I would then go out and steal expensive presents in order to demonstrate how much I felt for this woman, and she had run a mile, quite rightly. I got detoxed, and actually what I always feared probably would happened, and that is that I became terrified, that shy, damaged 16-year-old, 17-year-old young man who had first started taking drugs reappeared. And I was just incredibly scared of opening my mouth, of saying anything, of having an opinion, of just being in a room, and just absolutely riddled with sort of self-obsession about, everybody was looking at me, everybody wasn't looking at me. Did you go to a meeting really early, and then you'd have that uncomfortable moment when it was just you and the secretary in the room, and you might have to help with the chairs, and because there was only two of you, there was every chance there was going to be a conversation, so you want to avoid that. You wanted to avoid coming really late because everybody looked at you. Didn't want to sit at the front, although that was quite good in some ways, but then everybody could see the back of your neck, and that tiny little spot was the size of a carbuncle, and everybody was looking at it, they weren't listening to everything, and oh God, they always sat me next to people who cried, deliberately placed me next to people who showed huge emotion, angry people or weeping people. They always sat me next to them. And of course, they were always looking at how I was reacting to that. They weren't interested in the angry person or the tearful person. They were looking at how I was reacting to this. So even sitting was difficult. Do I sit relaxed? Do I nod? Because lots of people nodded. And I always thought I was missing out on something. And they were, so I would be planning exactly what I was going to say, and I would have this, script writers would be busy at work, my name's Jim, I'm an addict, and then I'd say, I really identified with something that you said, I didn't really, but I'd say I will. Then I'd try and say something profound about the steps, something a little bit amusing if I could possibly get it in there, and thank you very much. And then I would spend, I wonder quite why the room didn't break into applause, but I would then spend the rest of the meeting, I wish I'd said it like this, I should have. And I just found early recovery really, really difficult. So, all I can say to anybody who is new around, it really does get better, it does get easier. And so what's happened to me in recovery is that I have had I've had a really, really lovely time in recovery. I have not had, what is it they say, my worst day, you know that thing they say, my worst day using in recovery is better than my best day using, there's some phrase they used to say, bullshit. I had some fantastic days when I was using. Jara days were brilliant. And I've had some bloody shit days in recovery, really shit days. I think it was here last time I told the story of my first big romance in recovery. First time in my life I had felt that a woman actually loved me. I'd loved hundreds of women. I hadn't had sex with hundreds of women, let's get that clear. I'd loved hundreds of women. But this was the first time in my life I really felt that she loved me. And that was just the bloody essence of life as far as I was concerned. And I was, I work in the field and I was running, I apologize if you've heard this story before, I've only got a few stories. Anyway, I was running this rehab you know, I was the big head of the rehab and, you know, I was in love with this wonderful girl. And I went into group on the Monday morning and I hadn't seen my girlfriend. We've been going out for about a year and I hadn't seen my girlfriend for the weekend for some reason, I can't remember why. Anyway, open group is the way therapists always do. Yeah, good morning, everybody. You know, hope you've all had a good weekend. Has anybody got anything they'd like to share? And this sponge, Shannon, what would you like to say? He said, I fuck your girlfriend on Saturday. I went, oh. And then I fuck her on Sunday too. And I don't know, that wasn't actually a very good Spanish accent, but it was, and I was just like crucified, mortified, and I said something stupidly therapeutic and then just got up and burst into tears. And I was in tears for about 2 weeks. I was absolutely bereft. But the importance for me was that I am an absolute total atheist. I have absolutely nothing to do with God at all. I absolutely have no interest in God whatsoever. It just doesn't mean anything to me at all. I'm a total and utter atheist. So my higher power or my support system has always been about people. People in the fellowship who were there to help me, who guide me, give me advice, and do that sort of thing. And when this, which was the worst thing that had happened to me in recovery up until at that moment, it was the worst thing that had ever happened to me. I rang up a friend and I said, so-and-so's just told me that she's been shagging Chano, that was his name, I don't care. I'm in bits and I'm coming home. And by the time I got back home, which took me about 45 minutes, there were about seven or eight people from the fellowship waiting on my doorstep. And it was the most beautiful moment of my recovery. It was like my higher power in action. There were people waiting there for me. They were there for me to help me get through the next few days. And one of them said, right, I'm staying here. I'm going to sleep on the sofa. And it was just the most beautiful demonstration, because I had always been told off, I suppose, really, for not having an abstract belief system. And I'd always had enough faith that people, there were enough good people in the fellowship to get me through difficult times. And here was my first really difficult time, and the fellowship came up absolutely beautifully, and it looked after me. And I cried for 2 or 3 weeks. I was just inconsolable. And what I found is that in all times in my recovery, when there have been difficult moments, I've turned to the fellowship, I've turned to people, and they have always been there, and they've never, ever once, the fellowship has never let me down. People have let me down, of course they have. We're a bunch of people. We let each other down occasionally, but the fellowship has never, ever let me down, and that has given me incredible confidence. It's what I call my kind of secret army. I've been walking around on my own all day long, but I've never felt alone. I've felt all the time that I've had this kind of this invisible army that I can turn to at any moment, and I can just go, help me. And I know that there are at least a dozen people who would be there right away to help me. And that just gives me, you know, incredible strength. So today, you know, I remember when I first went to meetings, I used to hear people talk about buying houses, and I think, you tosser, that's never, ever going to happen to me. I was living in a little bedsit, and I thought it was never going to. My recovery has been littered with things that I knew were never going to happen. I knew I was never going to share from the floor. I knew that was never going to happen. It's too much. And then one day it happened. I knew I was never going to be able to do this. This was impossible. I could never do this. And it happened. I could never get a job. There's no way I could get a job. And I've worked too much, probably, in recovery. Well, I'll never get married. Well, I've been married twice. And, you know, I have a good relationship with my first. We've been married for 7 years, and we've got the most beautiful son who today got into, you know, got into drama school. He did it all on his own, and I just love that boy so much. Such a lovely feeling to have brought up a child properly, as opposed to my first child, who I did not bring up properly. But he rang me today and told me this, and I'm so pleased and happy for him. I got married again to a beautiful French woman. And we've been married, I don't know, 16 years now, and I've been faithful. That's the most incredible thing. It's made a big difference. Amazingly, incredible how these things work, really, isn't it? Kate was talking about the steps. I'm absolutely, the structure of the steps, the information I gained from the steps was absolutely really, really important to me. I didn't have a problem with the fourth and fifth step, but I find myself endlessly fascinating. I didn't give a shit about writing. I can do that all day long. That wasn't a problem. There were one or two things I wasn't that keen on sharing with somebody else, but there you go. You know, we've all cross-dressed at some point or other in our lives. Especially when we're stoned. All right, okay. Then I got to the other steps. I wanted to become perfect, and I started dressing really smartly and coming to meetings really smartly and trying to be really. And you know, there are still people wafting around the meetings. You see them all over the place who never get angry, who never get judgmental, who never get intolerant, who never get impatient. You know, my wife is forever holding me back from killing the old woman in front of me who's trying to count out every single fucking penny in her purse to pay for 11 pence worth of newspaper or something. And she's forever holding me back and saying, stop it, you know. I think I said, I'm unbelievably judgmental. Unbelievable. Just look at somebody, wanker, you know. Just I know nothing about them at all. Nothing about them at all. I'm driving along, they cross the road in front of me, wanker. I was told in rehab 33 years ago, you're controlling, you're impatient, and you're way too oversensitive. And guess what? 33 years later, I'm controlling, less so. I am unbelievably impatient. I was thrilled the day Amazon Prime came along, and you could actually order something at night and it would be there the next day, because that was a lot better than having to go to the shop and then say, we can get it for you in 3 days' time, which was never going to happen. And my feelings are just so pathetically easily hurt, it's a joke. I mean, I know where it all comes from. I've done all the therapy. I know exactly what, but you know, somebody's only got to say something in the wrong tone of voice with just the wrong inflection, and you fucking hate me, do you? Okay, all right. And I can just get so easily hurt. I wish it wasn't like that. It must be incredibly boring for my. It is incredibly boring for my wife. But it's just the way I am. I am a sensitive individual, and okay, all right. I've grown. I've grown. I am full of flaws, and I just would like to. It's quite possible to stay clean and be a flawed personality. You know, it's quite possible. All you have to do is not pick up drugs. There are certain flaws that, you know, I don't demonstrate any longer. I no longer knock over old ladies in the street, although sometimes I'd like to. But I don't steal their handbags any longer. But I am a very, very flawed individual, as I said. I'm all the things that I was told I was, but, it's okay. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to improve them, some more willingly than others. But, you know, I'm a work in progress, as they say. It's just taking me a lot longer than it seems to take other people. But the one thing I've always wanted in my life, and I think actually it probably applies to a lot of us, but certainly applied to me, is I wanted to feel loved. I really wanted to feel loved. And I certainly feel loved by my wife. I absolutely feel loved by my son. And I feel love in a slightly different way by the fellowship. I feel supported. I feel cared for. I feel that there are people in the fellowship who will support me when I need that support. And I have got things from life that I never thought I would get. So if you were to take me in that time machine again now and put me in front of the beautiful house that I have and my boring middle-class habits and my dull little car and my beautiful wife and beautiful son, I would take that every day. It's been worth every bit of angst and hardship and self-obsession and difficult days. It's been worth it every time. I'd rather have it than the shit that I had when I was using. And I'm really, really pleased to be in recovery. Thank you very much.